Good morning, everybody. Thanks for joining us on our third quarter 2011 results conference call. I think the Peyto team has done another amazing job this past quarter, and so as the management group, we're excited to be here today to talk a little bit about it. With me in the room today, we've got Scott Robinson, our COO, Kathy Turgeon, our Chief Financial Officer, Dave Thomas, our VP Exploration, Glenn Booth, our VP Land, J.P. Lachance, our newly appointed VP of Exploitation, and of course, Jim Grant, our Investor Awareness Rep. As usual, Jim, I see you've collected a bunch of questions for us, so why don't I turn it over to you?
Okay. Thank you. For those of you who are new to our conference calls, we hold the first half as a question and answer session where I ask some of the senior management questions about Peyto and its latest financials before we turn the call over to questions from investors and representatives of investment businesses. First, I'd like to welcome a new voice at this table, Jean-Paul Lachance, our new VP of Exploitation. J.P., welcome to the team. Would you like to give us your thoughts on what you've seen since joining Peyto?
Thanks, Jim. I'm excited to be here. I've been very impressed with the quality assets that I've seen here at Peyto and the efficiency of the Peyto Way. It's a testament to the quality and energy of the people working here. I look forward to growing with the company.
Well, thank you very much. Darren, turning to you, our President and CEO, our third quarter news release speaks of growth in production, cash flows, capital budget, even in our credit lines during our fall review with our credit syndicate, rather than waiting for the annual review after a reserve report. How did we grow in all these areas, especially on a per-share basis?
Well, Jim, you're right. We definitely are growing in all facets of our business. I think the main reason that we're seeing growth in all areas of our business is that the growth is highly profitable. If it wasn't, then just growing production, for instance, wouldn't result in growing cash flow or growing our credit capacity. For sure, if we couldn't show that our capital is being spent in a very highly profitable way, then we wouldn't be growing our capital programs. As you point out, I think it's real growth. It's growth on a per-share basis. There's not many companies, when I read press releases this quarter, that are talking about their growth on a per-share basis. We're all shareholders here, and so as shareholders, per-share growth is the only kind of growth, really. It's kind of like saying that a company can generate good internal rates of return, but yet can never show any return on capital. Shareholders don't get to invest in wells at the rate of return level. They only get to invest in companies. If you can't deliver return on capital, I don't think there's any real return for shareholders. I think the same goes for growth, where it has to be per share to be meaningful. We're definitely growing on a per-share basis, our production, our funds from operations, and I think when we get to the year-end reserves, it should show we're growing in reserves per share as well. I think maybe what shareholders don't see as much is that we're also growing our future potential. We've been successful picking up land. We've been successful identifying more and more drilling locations, expanding our territory in the Deep Basin. I think that's part of the growth that shareholders don't see, but as the future unfolds, they're going to see that growth too.
Okay. Now, I'm going to direct the next question to Scott Robinson, our VP of Operations and our COO. Scott, another area of growth has been in our infrastructure. We have seen significant growth this year and in the last quarter. Can you describe where this capacity has been added and how it has impacted our recent production growth over the last quarter and looking forward for the rest of the year and into breakup of next year?
Yeah, Jim, sure. Coming into the year, we had our sights set on expanding our gathering and our processing capacity at all three of the Greater Sundance plants, primarily to keep pace with the anticipated production adds from our drilling program. Thankfully, thus far this year, we've been very successful at doing that, staying ahead of the drill rigs, and we've been able to keep all of our gas flowing. For some of our competitors, it's been a bit of a tough year with some of their third-party processor outages, particularly at the K3 plant. We've been validated on our strategy to own and control our facilities. This past quarter, we were able to conclude the last major step in our 2011 plan, which was the doubling of processing capacity at our Nosehill plant. With that having been completed, we now sit with both Nosehill and Oldman at about 120 million of capacity each, And when you add everything together as a company, we now have over 320 million of overall takeaway capacity. We've seen some pretty good production increases recently. We're sitting at about 220 million. And when you include non-owned volumes and the additional wells that we'll be tying in over the course of the remainder of the year, we expect we'll be carrying about 35 or 40 million or 6,000 to 7,000 barrels equivalent of capacity into next year, which sets us up very well right through to breakout without any anticipated major infrastructure investments.
Okay. Now, turning to Kathy Turgeon, our CFO and VP of Finance, we've seen the G&A and interest on our credit lines drop significantly when measured against our production. In absolute terms, G&A is certainly down, and despite a 15% increase in net debt, our interest is up only a couple of a small amount over this quarter last year. How are we generating these efficiencies?
Well, Jim, on a per MCFE basis measured against our production, obviously our production growth makes up part of that change. However, on G&A, certainly we are down quarter over quarter, though if you look at G&A before overhead recoveries, it's actually flat. So we are growing but not adding to our G&A cost, our basic G&A costs. However, as our capital program has increased significantly, so do our capital overhead recoveries, which gives us a lower net G&A expense. On the credit lines, we have seen an increase in our net debt over the Q3 2011 over Q3 2010. However, that really didn't translate into significantly higher interest costs, because some of the costs that were being charged by the bank on extension fees and stamping fees have actually reduced year over year, offsetting the additional interest that we would have incurred because of increased debt.
Okay. Now, turning to Glenn Booth, our VP of Land. Glenn, our news release speaks to land positions we acquired in the Smoky area. Can you give us an idea of how these and other areas' land costs have affected our development and carrying out our capital plans so far this year?
Well, Jim, we've had another good year of acquiring undeveloped land. Third quarter was probably our busiest quarter, spending about $13 million, acquiring a township of land, principally in our central and southern core areas. We did have the opportunity, the first sale in October, to amass about 15 sections in Smoky, which is our liquid-rich Cardium play, extending about $4.5 million. All of this, again, just like last year, was a program by design and intentions. We had the ability to post a lot of these lands, time to our horizontal drilling wells, and all the technical merits that go with it, but they're well-positioned to our infrastructure and facilities. For the year, we hope to spend between $20-$21 million, acquiring between 60 and 70 sections. That would compare to last year, where we acquired about 100 sections, spending $12 to $13 million. If you look at it on a total basis, it would represent less than or close to 5% of our total capital expenditure. So really not much in the grand scheme of things to grow our land base, as Darren's been talking about, with all the capital we've got available to us. To me, the most important thing that we've accomplished this year with the acreage that we have acquired, it might be more in money, it may be less in land, but it's the quality of it. And if you can just imagine, we've now plowed through our 100th horizontal well. We've got all that information. We've got all the production over the last 2 years, so the history. It's really given us the competitive advantage to go to these sales or to do these deals and just grow the future of this Cretaceous play, which we've now gone through all those zones, to really give us the advantage over our competitors. So a great year to, again, amass a lot more undeveloped lands, but more importantly, to really provide an explosive drilling program for the future.
Okay, now turning back to Darren, you know, with our amazing production growth, the low commodity prices have still left us with considerable growth to our funds from operations over Q3 a year ago. When we look ahead to 2012 with a capital budget of $400 to $450 million, can we sustain the progress at current energy prices? We have made some significant predictions for production as well as the capital spending. How dependent on energy prices are our capital plans and our growth?
Well, Jim, it's a good question. It's just, you know, that's a question I get from a lot of investors is, how's the growth going to continue into the future? And I'd say that the plans we have for next year are definitely big plans. I mean, it's by far and away the largest capital program we've ever tried to do. But, you know, because spud to on stream times have gotten so quick, you know, even with the horizontal wells, because payouts are so much faster now than they were with vertical wells, we're able to fund the majority of these big programs with our cash flow. And our netbacks are staying very strong. You know, we've got cash costs that are going down. We've got very good netbacks in the sort of $24 a barrel range. I mean, those are competitive with most oil companies out there today. So very good netbacks. We're generating a lot of cash flow from the production that we're bringing on, and we're getting much quicker payouts. So we're able to recycle our capital faster. But as you point out, funding is obviously contingent on some commodity price assumptions. I don't think really we've seen a big change in gas prices. They've been bouncing along at this sort of $4 level or sub-$4 level for, 3 years now. I don't think we're going to see much degradation in the price there. We're kind of at the bottom. Also don't think we're going to see much improvement, though. The future strip is about at that same level. Liquids prices have definitely gotten stronger over the last year or so. But again, I don't think they're so high that we see some risk that they're going to back up in a big way and materially impact the cash flow that we can generate. And we're continuing to forward sell. We're still doing our hedges. We're still layering in forward sales, all at around that $4 gas price. And the great thing is that $4 gas price drives very good rate of return on the projects that we're doing right now. So, we can justify the big capital investments because $4 gas makes 30-odd percent or more rate of return, which is very strong. I think right now we're about maybe one-third hedged for next year. As we continue to layer in, we probably get closer to half of our gas production hedged for 2012. So, I think we've protected ourselves definitely a little bit and taken a lot of that commodity risk off the table, and with very strong netbacks, we're in a great position to fund this big program for next year.
Okay. Now, turning to Dave Thomas, our VP of Exploration, in terms of using our capital budget, we have often noted that we have a tremendous depth and breadth of drilling opportunities on our lands. How do the new horizons we've been testing this year impact our inventory of drilling locations?
Jim, Peter will actually be exiting 2011 with more drilling inventory than when we started the year. We've been proving up new locations in both our core development areas and in our older undeveloped areas as well, plus we've been capturing new lands and locations. So we've actually grown our drilling inventory to 10 years, or 670 to 930 locations, depending on how you count the contingent wells. We test new zones and new areas because we're hoping to prove up multiple follow-up opportunities. For example, this year we successfully drilled and tested multi-frac horizontals in the fault charting play in both our Smoky, Kiskew, and Chime areas, and this proved up numerous locations on our existing land base and gave us the confidence to acquire a new land on the play so that we now have 45 additional liquids-rich faulted charting locations to feed our gas plant up at Kakwa. Similarly, we successfully tested and purchased additional lands on a new Wilrich play, which helped to more than replace the 24 Wilrich wells that we drilled in 2011. Plus, with some additional success, it could result in the construction of a new gas plant for Peyto in that play. Additionally, we will be evaluating two more new Wilrich areas by early 2012, and we've also begun to develop the Wilrich Dyer Old Man gas plant located between our successes at Nose Hill and Obed. In Sundance, we've recently finished our very first Blue Sky horizontal well, and it looks good. Pending a successful completion, we'll have another 14 follow-up locations. Up at Cut Bank, we've recently drilled our first Dunvegan horizontal, which will follow up with a faulted Dunvegan horizontal test in 2012 to help determine the development potential of two Dunvegan marine shoreface sand clays that we've identified near our Cut Bank gas plant. We've also captured some new lands on a Cadot play in our northern area, which we'll test in 2012. And Although we only had a modest result with our first Cataman horizontal back in 2010, we plan to drill another Cataman in 2012. And with the experience of more than 100 horizontal wells now under our belt, we aim to overcome some of the drilling and completion challenges we had with our first early attempt. So Peba's not a one-trick pony. We spread out our drilling over several zones, and I think that one of the benefits of this should be that it provides us with more predictability and stability in our overall results, as we're not depending on a single big play to carry the day. So looking forward to 2012, I see we're in great shape in the Wilrich. The Cardium and Faulted Cardium, plus we barely scratched the surface of our middle and upper Polaire inventory. The Cuin, it's in good shape too, but relative to our other zones, this is where we'll be seeking out new lands to capture in the new year.
Okay, thanks. Scott, as Dave mentioned about those 100 horizontal wells we've drilled to date, with that experience, how have our expectations and our confidence level in our expectations evolved for the reserves booked and the internal rate of return for our new horizontal wells?
Yeah, Jim, certainly the passage of time is a key factor in providing more performance data, and as well just drilling more and more of these wells and getting competitive results. Both of those items or variables have definitely increased our level of confidence in the wells and in our overall program amongst all of the different zones. It's just taking a look at those 100 wells. We've got about 40 from our original 2009-10 programs that have more than 6 months to more than a year of performance, and we've got another 24 this year, so 64 wells with up to 6 months performance data. And although there's some natural variation from well to well within each well type group, we've seen that these wells have been remarkably consistent, and in aggregate, the 2011 wells as a group are almost a replica of the 2010 wells in terms of the rate performance of these wells. So I guess in summary, we haven't seen any kind of deterioration, and you know, we're seeing very consistent results. With respect to the reserves, we'll just have to, as Darren pointed, we'll just have to wait and see at the end of this year before we can really draw any firm conclusions. However, it's interesting to note that our 2009 and 10 wells, as we look at their current rate performance and measure it against what the reserve companies had booked for what they would be doing at this point in time, we're actually beating those projections. So that could speak well to a possible reserve increase for those wells. But again, we'll just have to wait and see how the year closes out on those. We have done some preliminary internal reserve work. JP and the guys have been looking at the wells from species to species, and we're seeing very consistent reserve and economic outcomes year over year on these wells with full cycle rates of returns at or above the 30% return level. By and large, again, the performance data is giving us an increased confidence in reserves that are very repeatable and economics that are very attractive at today's prices.
Okay. Now, JP, following up on Scott's answer, do our results for certain particular well types suggest we should focus only on one or two zones of interest to maximize profitability? With the disparity in price between gas and liquids, should we be turning the majority of our capital towards the liquid-rich zones, or will our focus continue to be balanced among several zones?
Yeah, we've had great success with our Spirit River plays, which tend to have more modest liquid yields than, say, the Cardium. Our internal analysis of these leaner horizontal wells in the Wilrich, Nauticua, and the Slayer formations show us good or better returns, rates of return, than the richer Cardium horizontal wells because they have superior gas production profiles. This overcomes that price disparity that you mentioned, even at the current low gas prices. So we'll continue to balance the drilling program across all our prospective horizons going forward to maximize our return to the shareholders.
Okay. So several of the other gas-weighted operators are occasionally announcing extremely high test rates for some of their wells as they, too, turn to multi-stage frac wells as their method of development. How do Peyto's test rates and initial well capabilities stack up to the competition? Are these initial test rates meaningful to the ultimate productive capability and profitability of these types of tight gas wells?
Jim, I can read you the test rates for all 100 of our wells, but I don't think we have enough time here. The initial test rates, that's an interesting parameter, and Darren addressed it, I believe, in one of his monthly reports not too long ago. It has limited meaning and utility, really. When it comes to these low permeability or tight reservoirs, the post-frac cleanup wells are rates right after completion, they're very temporary and they're generally not sustainable. However, I will say that internally we do get excited when we get wells with extremely high test rates. We've had several wells at the 20 to 30 million a day test rate range, and that's at a restricted capability level. If we had bigger gear to test them with, they'd probably top the 50, 60 million. But again, that's not meaningful in the overall context of the well's ability to generate money. It's our practice with these highly prolific wells to install downhole chokes, regulate the first 3 to 6 months of production, and that's really beneficial and important in balancing the overall facility utilization picture. We don't want to have spikes in production that upset the cart. And at the end of a year, it really doesn't matter. You produce the same amount of gas whether you pulled hard on the front end of the well or whether you regulated it. A well's ultimate profitability is really closely tied not to this initial rate, but to the sustained rate, as I indicated, and that's what we like to focus on. What's a well doing after 6 months? Or what's it doing after a year? With regard to how well our wells are doing as compared to our competitors, we are always making comparisons and rationalizing performance. And by and large, when we're looking at like zones, we are seeing equal or more often superior results to our competitors. This does make sense to us, particularly from the standpoint that we have been able to situate our lands over some of the thickest parts of these reservoirs. And you know, that's very important in terms of the overall long-term profile on a well, just how much resource is that well tapping into. And Dave and his guys have really focused our drilling programs on some of these zone thicks, and as a result, we're seeing wells that are hanging in there for a little bit longer than some of the steep profiles of offset competitor wells. So, you know, we're doing very well in that context. And kind of another parameter that's not related to the reserves, but we've been able to look at our costs relative to our competitors, and some of our competitors have recently been announcing some cost improvements, which are very good, and you know, that flows with experience in drilling these wells. But I will say that the wells that we drilled over 2011 here, when we put them up against some of the competitors, we're still seeing about a 10 to 20% cost reduction in our wells as compared to the like wells of some of the offset guys. So with the superior performance and the cost profiles, we're quite comfortable where we sit relative to the competition.
Okay. Now, Darren, again this year we have announced some aggressive targets, and we suggest that the next year may be even more aggressive in terms of capital spending at $400 to $450 million. Based on the success to date and the large inventory of high-quality opportunities, is it possible we will accelerate our capital program even further in 2012?
Well, Jim, you know, I suppose it's possible. As I said earlier, this is already the largest capital program we've ever tried in Peyto's history. But, you know, this is where the technology is having such a huge impact. The wells we're drilling today are just that much more productive. They're developing multiples of reserves, but they don't take multiples of people. So we can develop more reserves and production and cash flow than ever before with this same 35-man team at Peyto here in Calgary. And it's really quite fantastic. And, you know, at the same time, we're seeing our cash costs go the opposite direction. I mean, they're coming down. Our total cash costs right now, I think, are a little over $7 a barrel for everything. Royalties, off costs, transportation, interest, G&A. I mean, that's lower than most people's op costs alone. So, you know, we've got this small, efficient team, and, you know, it's amazing how much we're getting done. And you would think that logically there should be some sort of limit to how much we can do. But, you know, I have to bite my tongue now because, you know, every time I say that we've reached our limit in terms of, Peyto's capability, we blow through that and we manage to accomplish more. If we do $450 million in 2012, over the last 3 years, we'll have spent over $1 billion. We'll have invested over $1 billion in just 3 years' time. You know, that's amazing to the size of company that we are. And we'll have taken production from 17,000 BOEs a day to over 50,000 BOEs a day. You know, that's a tripling in 3 years. Unbelievable, really. I don't think anybody would have predicted it. I don't think anybody at all, if we go back 3 years, nobody was predicting that Peter was going to do this over the next 3 years. And so, not even me or Scott, we were optimistic about our future, but this has really been an amazing ride so far. And, at this point, with Beto, I think anything is possible. I can see this team going forward and continuing to do more and more every year. And, the impact is, as you've seen over the last 3 years, it's amazing.
Okay. Now, Jenny, at this point, I'd like us to turn the call over to questions from investors and members of the investment community.
We'll now take questions from the telephone line. Our first question is from Rob Belinsky from Morningstar. Please go ahead.
Hey, good morning, guys. Congratulations on another great quarter. Just had a couple quick questions on the Faller. Do you guys think that there's any opportunity to bring down well costs as you kind of ramp up your activity in that play? And kind of where do you see that falling out longer term?
Maybe I'll start in and Scott or Dave can probably chime in as well. It's interesting, Rob. One of the things that we've seen, I think, over the last 100 horizontal wells is that some of the deeper formations actually drill quicker and easier than, say, some of the shallower formations. I know when we look back at the time to drill a Cardium well, for instance, that exists at about 2,200 meters deep, and then we go sideways, maybe anywhere from sort of 1,000 to 1,500 meters, and compare that to, a flare well where that would be at 2,700 meters or 2,800 meters deep, and then we go again another 1,000 meters horizontally, we're drilling those deeper wells sometimes a lot quicker even than the Cardium wells. Maybe a lot of that has to do with the uniformity of the sand, nice fine-grained, clean sandstones that we're drilling through, not a lot of conglomerate or variable rock that we're running through, so that helps the drilling go faster. Generally speaking, from an improvement standpoint, though, we look back to the start of our horizontal program, and over the last 2 years, I think on average, we've shaved about 30% of the drilling time off. So that's pretty good. We started with about 30 to 35 days a well, and now we're down to 20 to 25 days a well, which I think is really improving things quite a bit. It's not a direct correlation, obviously, to dollar for dollar or days for dollars. We still have the meterage that we have to take care of. So generally, for I think every day we're saving about sort of 50 cents on the dollar in terms of cost, but we've managed to cut, I think, close to $500,000 off the drilling cost, which, that's really counteracting a lot of the inflation that we've seen, the 10 to 15% service cost inflation we've seen over the last couple of years. We've managed to counter that with, improvements. And while, I'm always a little cautious saying that we're going to improve that much more again going into the future, and everybody is proud of what we've got to this point, but you look at a lot of other plays, and they continue to see improvement in drilling times and drilling costs. They continue with experience and with the repeatability drive down the cost. So I guess I'm not going to be surprised if we continue to see some of those improvements going forward. And I think, Dave is pointing out to me that we can do some optimization in terms of wellbore design. Right now, the way our wells are designed, we drill and set intermediate casing at the 90-degree point, and then we go out and drill a horizontal section. One of the changes in wellbore design really would be not to set that intermediate, to go right around the corner and drill all the way out the horizontal section, what's called a monobore well design, and then run the pipe all the way to bottom. And that saves quite a bit of cost and time, but in the early stages of some of these plays, that can get a little bit risky. If you haven't got the experience going around the corner and going out all the way, and you don't know that the zones are going to hold together the way they need to hold together to be able to pull that off. So, it's with experience and with repeatability that we can start to make some of these modifications to the well design that really will help us with the cost. I don't know, Scott, you want to chime in on that?
You hit most of the points there, Darren. No, we have seen improvement with respect to the flare. It's one of the lowest cost well types that we are drilling, and with the resource having been proved up further this year and with the vision that the guys have put together on maps, another element to cost reduction will be our surface plans and the way we attack that resource. We're finding cost improvements in drilling back-to-back multiple wells off of one location, and that's something that we'll be visiting. Another item related to the flares, unrelated to the cost, is the liquid content of those wells. unlike some of the other Spirit River zones, the liquid content of the flare is a little more intermediate in nature, a little more liquids rich, and that bolsters the economics and gives us, you know, that much more of an economic advantage on that well type. So with what you've described, Darren, and with what we've seen thus far, we're very excited about the flare and hence the comment that it'll become a more important component of our overall mixture of formations that we're developing in the future here.
That's great. Can you give any kind of indication as far as how these faller inventories economics might stack up compared to the rest of your plays?
They're on an unrisked well type basis. They're up in that 60% rate of return level. They're comparable to some of our higher performing Wilrich wells and our higher performing Nautikewin wells. So they're up there at the top.
All right, great. And then just one more from me. Have you guys looked into liquefied petroleum gas fracs, and do you have any thoughts on those?
We're always considering the different stimulation alternatives that are available to us. And at this point, from the results that we've seen, we're quite happy with our nitrified water-based fracs. The nitrogen provides some energy for flow back and minimizes the damage that might be incurred by the injection of water. Putting hydrocarbons into the ground to carrying sand with the intent to carry sand proppant is an interesting approach, and we're watching others do it. Certainly it's less damaging than some of the other fluid choices. It has limitations on how much sand you can pump, and certainly on the cost basis how much fluid you can pump into the ground. And there are some other concerns with respect to using hydrocarbons, especially when you're pumping the big fracs that we are pumping, just having it available and getting it out there and storing it. So at this point, it's not a primary consideration, but you know, if it proves to be something that we should consider in the future, we will consider it. We're always open to improving what we're doing.
Okay, well, thanks, and again, great quarter.
Thanks, Rob.
The following question is from Stanislav Lopata from Maurer Investment Management. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good morning. My question is about lower gas price. And if you are seeing better opportunities right now maybe to buy, and if so, would you consider a large acquisition, given your desire not to have too much inventory sitting? Thank you.
You know, great question, Stan. I think, you know, we often are looking at a lot of the acquisition opportunities, especially within the Deep Basin and around us, where we've got a keen understanding of the opportunity set there. But you're right, the tough part is comparing that to what we can do with our own inventory and the fact that, you know, as Dave alluded to, we've got 10 years of inventory. The last thing we want to do is buy the 11th year, because really when you discount the value of that back to today, it doesn't carry a lot of value, and likely you aren't going to be able to buy it for that. So, you know, really we're looking for opportunities today that would have to fit in the near term, or we would have to, they would have to be equivalent at least to what we're doing in the near term, and we'd have to be able to do them incrementally then to what we're currently putting up, or it doesn't really make a lot of sense. So, you know, we're attempting with a $450 million program to go as fast as we can possibly go. Can we make an acquisition alongside that and go even faster? Could we buy some property and put another $100 million to work on that property and do $550 million in 1 year? Maybe. You know, I have to keep saying that anything's possible here at Peyto, but, you know, that's the kind of thing we have to consider. There's no question. And, you know, from what we've seen on the street, there are some interesting acquisition opportunities available. There are some distress, for sure, in some of the junior sector where they're kind of stuck. They don't have a lot of cash flow to drill these big, expensive wells, and, you know, leverage is, for them, scary. So, you know, there's an interesting polarization right now between those that have the cash and the capability and the programs that they can move forward on, and those that don't really have the ability to move forward, even if they do have the opportunity. So, you know, we're keeping a close eye on those, and we're constantly looking to see if maybe we can take one down. But again, we're very disciplined. We know that we can generate some fantastic return on our own inventory, and we don't have to have those those acquisitions, you know, we've been able to do amazing things just coming up with our own drilling locations and buying new lands and building our own assets. And so really buying, you know, what someone else has built, a lot of times it doesn't fit, but we keep looking for sure. We're getting bigger and bigger, and we're developing more and more every year. So we definitely need to have that long life inventory out in front of us. And you know, right now we've got lots, obviously too much, in fact. So we have to keep trying to accelerate and keep trying to bring more of it into the near term. But we're going to keep looking at the offsets as well.
Okay, thank you.
You bet.
Thank you. There are no further questions registered, and I'd like to turn the meeting back over to Mr. G.
Okay, well, thanks very much. I realize it's a very busy week, especially a short week with Remembrance Day. You know, I'd like to thank those who participated in our call this morning. I think you've probably taken away that we've had an amazing year, a very busy year. We're still in the final period of that busy year, and then we're going to enter next year where we've got some amazing plans and some grand plans for continuation of this unbelievable growth profile that we're currently on. You know, tomorrow's Remembrance Day, so, you know, I guess it's perhaps fitting that we take a moment and be very thankful for, you know, the freedoms to be able to do what we're doing here at Peyto. I think we're definitely trying to make the most of those freedoms. So thanks again for listening in, and we'll be back to you next quarter with more exciting news, I'm sure.